Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, 7:14 and a half, blue-gray skies get us started this week, and that is in advance of some rain that's going to happen today and tomorrow. Some rain falling already. That's in advance of a cold front. Highs today and tomorrow are around 67, and Wednesday the highs go back down to 55 degrees or so, maybe a little bit higher than that, so we'll get some more cold weather coming in. Bruce Jennelson joins us, professor of public policy and political science at Duke University, previously worked in the State Department and on the Middle East peace process. Jordan Fiegel's smart enough to see this coming with Bashar Assad last week, and Bruce, which is heads up to Jordan. How you doing, Bruce?
I'm good, Tommy. Hope you are as well.
I am okay. Tell people, if we can, I guess, about Syria and its place in the world and how it fell under the rule of the Assads.
Yeah, so Bashar Assad and his father, Hafez, ruled Syria for over 50 years. And even by, let's call it, standards of other Middle East countries, they were pretty brutal dictators. The prisons were full of political prisoners. In the civil war that's gone on for about the last 14 years, about half the Syrian population has either fled the country as refugees or been displaced. But it seemed like, there was a stalemate there. There weren't, there wasn't a lot happening. And then within a week to 10 days, boom, this rebel group, it's not the only rebel group fighting. First, it took over the city of Aleppo, which is the second biggest city up on the coast. And then was in Damascus, and now we turn around and Bashar Assad's taking asylum in Moscow.
How did it happen so quickly in a second? But first of all, how did the people of Syria, I saw a quote over the weekend that I loved, and somebody said, dictators look good until the last 10 minutes. And I saw somebody else wrote a piece about institutions and individuals. And I just wonder, how did the people of Syria fall under the dictatorship of the Assads?
Well, if we go back to when his father came to power in the early 1970s, almost every country in the region, Arab country, was under some form of one-person rule. There were kings, like in Jordan. There was, Saddam Hussein actually had a predecessor in Iraq. In Egypt, the military, Mubarak had been a general before he came in. So it wasn't that uncommon in the region. And it got worse, when the so-called Arab Spring happened in late 2010, 2011, and there were, revolutions in Tunisia and Egypt and Yemen and Syria. It was another one of those moments that said, wow, there'd been no change, and suddenly it's happening all over the place. And that's when Syria's civil war started. And when it happened, in Tunisia and Egypt, they basically, protesters wanted to get rid of the leaders, figuratively off with your head. In Syria, it was actually interesting. They really didn't want to necessarily get rid of Assad, but they wanted him to change. And his unwillingness to reform even a little bit, led to this war, and there are so many different ethnic groups in Syria that this group that's triumphed is by no means the only one that's been out there fighting.
Let me ask about the ethnicity and also religion. Where does all of that fit in the makeup of Syria, and who could wind up running the country?
So this group that came to power, which the acronym is HTS, it's an Arabic name, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, is actually originally an offshoot of al-Qaeda and then ISIS. And allegedly the leader, this guy Abu Muhammad al-Jolani, says he's been more pragmatic. But he's an Islamist. He had his first major speech over the weekend at the Umayyad Mosque in Damascus, which is the biggest and a very historic mosque, and he referred to an Islamist future. So we don't know. I think it's pretty wide feeling that it's good that Assad is gone. Mm-hmm. But these guys ain't Democrats, and it's with all the four or five or more groups fighting, it's not clear how they're actually going to govern. After all the rejoicing and people getting into the presidential palace and all that sort of thing, you know, the next reports are going to be now what happens next.
Because I did see a report, Bruce, of and I forgot exactly how they phrased it, but they were protecting some facilities, and they said that they were protecting the institutions, and they didn't want it to fall into another dictatorship, which goes to individuals as opposed to institutions. But they, that being said, that institution could be ISIS or Sharia law, something along those lines, right?
Yeah, they did make one pragmatic move. They asked the prime minister to stay on and help them, you know, run things, provide services, and the like. And that's kind of learning the lesson from Iraq. When Saddam fell, there was an effort to get rid of everybody and anybody who'd been associated with him, including people that, you know, actually knew how to get things done and weren't necessarily, you know, repressive people. So that was a positive step. You know, Turkey's very involved. They've supported this guy. The U.S. has about 1,000 troops up in the northeast of Syria helping the Kurds, which is one of the big groups who are a Muslim group. They're not an Islamist group, but their identity is different than some of the other, you know, ethnic and religious groups in Syria. And so Turkey, Iran, Russia still has some naval bases there, so they still got some interest. The U.S., Jordan, Israel, you know, everybody is involved now. The Israelis have moved up a little bit into southern Syria. We had a bunch of airstrikes against ISIS forces, you know, just in the last day or two. So it's going to be swirling around us for quite a while.
Now, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back, and I'll ask you if what's in the best interest of the Syrian people is in the best interest of the rest of the world, or are those two aligned at all? Bashar Assad, I believe, is known to have killed about 300,000 plus of his own people, which pales in comparison to Stalin, which is at 12 million. But just like Saddam Hussein, he did use chemical weapons against his own people. 7:21 traffic now, WWL. 7:26 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Bruce Jennelson, our friend, professor of public policy, political science at Duke University, who previously worked in the State Department and on the Middle East peace process, so he knows the players, he knows of what he speaks. When it comes to Assad and Syria, I mentioned, Bruce, before the break, if what was in the best interest of Syrians was in the best interest of the rest of the world, but I wonder if you can put all Syrians in the same circled. Was Assad any nicer to Christians than he was to Muslims or sects of Muslims? Oh, Bruce, you're breaking up, and I have to have the answer to this question. Let's try it again. Bruce, let me take a break. Tim's going to try to reconnect with you. We'll try to call him back. Meanwhile, I will remind you of some things going on here at WWL. Christmas is for kids, of course, and if you want to feel good about New Orleans, you can join Newell Norman Thursday live from the New Orleans Chamber's annual business luncheon at the Hilton, New Orleans Hilton Riverside. You can visit with business and industry leaders, celebrate 20 years of the Chamber and 20 years of good business with special guests Jay Cicero, Sandra Herman, Blaine Kern Jr., and Percy Master P. Miller. That's Newell at the New Orleans Chamber's annual meeting Thursday. But Christmas is for kids. That has to do with Newell Norman Wednesday at H2O Salon and Spa on Metairie Road. He'll collect new gifts, toys and books, plus donations for Toys for Tops. You can stop by, say hi, bring an unwrapped gift, or make a donation on behalf of your family or business. Let's fill up the sidewalk with toys and gifts. Newell at H2O Salon and Spa. That's Wednesday, and then he's at the Chamber Luncheon on Thursday. Bruce Dennelson's back, hopefully a better connection. Bruce, I asked about what's in the interest of Syrians and the interest of the country, and can you put all Syrians in the same bunch, or was Assad more friendly to Christians or Muslims of one sect or the other? Thoughts?
Yeah, there's a segment called the Alawites, which are an offshoot of Shia that was his, and he was mostly favorable to them. I think what all Syrians would benefit from is, you know, a government that's maybe a little bit democratic and is not repressive. There's a lot of natural talent in that country. I was actually there back in 2009. for some negotiations, and I met with artists and people in business. And if some of the people, the millions that left would come back, they could actually have a chance to set a model for other Arab countries. I wish I could be more confident that's going to happen, but that would be the best thing.
So who is it up to right now to determine what happens in Syria?
It's really going to be internal. It's not something that we can determine. Right now, our highest priority is protecting the Kurds up in the northeast, because they've been fighting this group that came to power. And the Turks also don't like the Kurds because they're connected to Kurds in Turkey that the government doesn't like and all that sort of thing. And we have about 1,000 Americans stationed there. And I know I've met a lot of these guys when I come back to the States, and they believe the Kurds are really good partners. They help us fight terrorism. That's our number one priority. And then we need to work with others. Arab countries need to be in the lead in figuring out how Syria can sort of stay within the guardrails and have a prospect of a decent future. But that's not for us to go and run. We can help, but it's really time for countries like the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt to kind of be in the lead on that, because they've got the most at stake and they know the players the most. And we can help them, but we shouldn't, pick a side and say that's our guy. That never works.
Well, we only have 20 seconds left. Is the world a more dangerous place, less dangerous place, or no change now that Assad has left?
I think it's no change. It's like, we had a terrible guy, we might have another bad guy. But, again, the fact that he left is a good thing in and of itself, so let's see where we go.
Thank you, Bruce. Appreciate it. As always, we'll come back to take a look at the Wall Street Monday Morning Markets with Mark when we return here on WWL. 7:45, quarter till 8, Monday morning, December 9th. Going to be a rainy day, and tomorrow's going to be a rainy day. And I've not heard anything about neutral ground parking, but I'm sure they'll send out a text when they decide to allow that. Then it turns cool on Wednesday. Mark Rosa joins us now, our friend, president, CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Take a look at the week ahead on Wall Street, a little thing we call Monday Morning Markets with Mark. How you doing, Mark?
Good morning, sir. I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay. How's the market?
Marquette's plural. That's right. I was looking back at my notes. I said recently they all three of the indices hit highs, and you and I were talking about that just this past Monday. The Dow, S&P, and the Nasdaq hit highs. It was a combination of expectation of the Fed acting and lowering the rates, and corporate earnings were still coming in pretty decently, and the vast majority of the companies reporting were beating their estimates. So two things determine stock prices largely. It's corporate earnings and interest rates. If you've got interest rates going down, that's the direction that you'd want. And corporate earnings going up, again, the direction that somebody would investor would want for sure. And that propelled all those averages to the to all-time highs. Now, the market is one of those places that's like, well, that was good. What have you done for me lately? Just 4 days later, the Dow retreated a little bit. We're worried about everybody, all the market, all the analysts are worried about what the CPI and the PPI inflation gauge is going to do this week. But before that, just what happened last week, the manufacturing rose fairly significantly. The Manufacturing Purchases Manager Index and the Institute for Supply Management. I know those are mouthfuls, but manufacturing got so beaten down over the past couple of years that's good that it's reviving naturally. It's good for U.S. economy, good for the people that work there, good for us, and we're buying goods and services from them. So that was good news early on.
And what sector is that, Mark? What are they manufacturing?
That was a manufacturing report, Tommy. So again, that's good news. And Trump's promises are, and I think part of a more complicated issue, that he likes tariffs, and everybody knows that, but it's kind of a protectionist measure, and that could be very contentious in the economic community to say you're doing that, to imposing tariffs. But it's all kind of protectionist. It's all kind of, well, I'm trying to insulate or protect the local industries by raising money, raising prices on goods and services that are coming from abroad. So maybe that's why a lot of these averages are perking up, because he knows what economic policies are going to come out in their favor. And the so to segue into the employment report for November, that's the always reported the first Friday into the new month. So this was last Friday. where 214,000 jobs were new jobs were expected in November, and instead it came in at 227. So that was good news also. That's what contributed to those market averages hitting highs. But the employment picture was, you know, people got to look back over 2 months. October was just crushed. It was crushed by circumstances happening at Boeing. I think they had a layoff, and we had some hurricane activity that only produced 36,000 jobs. So if you add in the 36 to the 227, and a lot of analysts were taking the average, the number wasn't so spiffy. It was, you know, 160,000 per month over the last 2 months. So it wasn't such the surprise when the unemployment rate ticked up a little bit. We just didn't produce enough jobs to keep it at 4.1. Unemployment rate now at 4.2. Still a good number, a low number, and that's good for the economy going forward. Tommy, just a couple of weeks ago, the Fed said that the second quarter credit card numbers again hit all-time highs. And the second quarter ends on June 30th, and the consumer credit statistic came out for October, and it was expected that consumer credit would rise at $10 billion, and it rose at $19 billion, almost double what was expected. And it was like credit cards are driving purchases. It's up 14% in 8 months, and you and I had said that how high can it go, and that's a little bit of headwind on the economy because at some point that party is going to peter itself out, and then people are left with very high and very expensive from an interest rate standpoint, credit card bills. So we'll, you know, keeping an eye on that every month, of course. So segueing over to this week, we've got productivity supposed to be up. These are the expectations. And then the CPI and the PPI, Consumer Price Index. This has got some of the – that's why the Dow retreated. It's got some of the market participants worried because CPI is expected to come in at up 0.3% this month. We take those figures, we multiply them by 12 and get an annual number. So up 0.3 is a 3.6% annual rate. And that's not comfortable because the last several months it was up 0.2, about a 2.4% annual rate. So if it starts to move into the 3 category, that's when the analysts are saying, well, what is the Fed going to do? And or are they going to stop for a while to see what's going on? And we had all these rate cuts that were baked into the cake for this year, and the number of them came substantially lower than what was initially expected. So all this inflation news is still very much front and center. The CPI, to give you another for instance, the year over year has been at 3.3%. It's been that way for 4 months in a row. And the Fed has said it so repeatedly. It's like, no, we want the number to start with a 2. And we want it to maintain starting with a 2, like 2.4, 2.5, 2.6. We want that going forward so we know that inflation is not rearing its head again. So that's going to be something to continue to watch, and that's where I think the market has just traded a bit sideways. And I think it's going to continue this week where it's just the CPI, as long as they come in reasonably well, the last thing would be that the Fed meets in 8 days, and the percentage probability is up over 74% chance was Monday that they're going to cut rates, and now it's 85% chance they're going to cut rates by 25 basis points. So that's kind of baked into the cake, that's baked into the market average, that's baked into everybody's expectation. So they really need to hit the nail on the head. What's also rising is a percentage chance that they're not going to do anything in January, and for months it was, no, we're going to start cutting into the first quarter of next year. So it's a lot of wait and see. A lot of this has already been planned into the numbers, Tommy. So we just got a couple of weeks left in 2024. Then you start off in January that a whole new set of earnings are going to come out. You're in earnings season again. So I think in between that, there's not a lot to motivate the market to go much higher or lower. I think it's going to hold what it has.
So, Mark, this is in a way unrelated, but my 401k used to have a thing where I could punch it in over the weekend, punch in the numbers and the security code and all that stuff and get my balance. And as of the last couple of weeks, I can't get that. They tell me to talk to an operator. Should I infer from that somebody has loaded their car with my 401k and headed to Mexico or not?
Yeah, I don't know how to interpret that. You should be able to get into your account whenever you want to.
That's what I was wondering about. I'm just saying.
Trunk load of accounts going to south of the border.
Yeah, it's a big firm. It's a big firm, so I think they're okay. Yeah. I'm just wondering about that.
I would have that same reaction. I would get on the phone with them, and why can't I get into the account? I need to be able to check it 24/7, whenever you want to check it, not when they want it to. They want to make it available. We passed this 1970.
Yeah,
you should be able to get in there and see what your balances are.
I'm afraid we get a guy that picks up the phone and says it's gone. It's all gone. What? What do you mean it's gone? Well, it's gone. There's nothing we can do about it.
No. That I wouldn't worry about. But the averages have done really well this year, so people should feel good about where the balances are, depending on what you're invested in, naturally. But as far as the market averages, I think this year has been a good one.
I'd feel good if I could find out what the balance is. You know,
work on that. Look, hand the rest of the show over to Tim, and I'd get on that right away.
I'll do that. You know, God forbid.
Yes,
what do you mean we had a problem? We had a problem, and it's gone. And there's nothing we can do about it. Thank you, Mark.
Yes, sir.
Day.
Appreciate it.
We'll talk to you again. Have a great week. Mark Rosa, President, CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, 7:55, 5 till 8. Traffic now, WWL.